Okay, starting over. Freedom and sorrow. The liberation of the death train prisoners had taken place about a mile and a quarter from the small village of Trobitz in eastern Germany. At first, many of the passengers hesitated to leave the train. They were too ill, too weak, or too timid to venture onto the German soil on their own. But the Russian soldiers soon made it clear that they had no supplies to share with the former prisoners and were, in fact, assigned to move on north toward Berlin. They also assured the refugees that most of the German population of Trobitz had fled and that most of the abandoned farmhouses contained food, clothing, and bedding that were theirs for the taking. So before the day was out, Ruth said, we left the train and headed for the village. Just as the Russians had said, many farmhouses were empty. In the first one I entered, I sniffed a faint but delicious smell of smoked meat. Following the scent, I climbed up to the second floor and found an attic with cured hams and sausages hanging from the rafter. At once I cut down a ham and brought it with me to the lower floor. Although we had not been deeply observant Jews, when we lived in Germany, we had never eaten pork. But even Jewish law recognizes that there may be a time of great need. For us, this was the first plentiful protein we had had in years, and our bodies craved this nourishment. Marion was, at this time, 10.5 years old and weighed only 35 pounds. I myself weighed 75. The Trobitz farmhouses were well stocked, too, with milk, butter, cheese, and eggs. Pigs, cows, and even chickens had been left behind, as well as heavy jars of preserved fruits and vegetables. Marion delighted in the sweet jams and preserves on the farmhouse shelves, but she soon learned that a shrunken stomach and a starved body must be fed very slowly and gradually. Many of the prisoners fell too greedily on rich and abundant food. Some actually died of the sudden overeating. The farmhouse that the Blumenthals had entered became their new living quarters. It was a small house, Marion remembered, and we had it mostly to ourselves. Even though we could have spread out a little, we all slept in one room. Papa was in very poor health by this time, and my leg was still a raw and open wound. After huddling together on the train for 2 weeks, we feared the slightest separation. We wanted to stay as close to each other as my four perfect pebbles, the little stones that I could hold in the palm of my hand. After the Russian liberators of the death train moved on, other Russian units arrived in Trobitz to secure the conquered region for the formal occupation forces that were to follow. The military, too, foraged in the village and surrounding countryside for food and other supplies, for they were often poorly equipped. In their crude way, though, Marion said, the Russians tried to help us the best they could. They were extremely good to me, AR question. For each day, they transported me to a nearby Russian Army field hospital where they treated my leg. First, they would clean the wound, and then they would sprinkle it with a greenish-yellow powder. Mama and I believed that this powder was a form of penicillin, a miracle drug for infections that had been discovered before the war. As the first weeks in Trobitz went by, we noticed that new skin was beginning to form around the large burned area of the wound. Mama and I were sure that the nourishing diet, including milk, eggs, and meat, that I was now eating was also helping my body to renew itself. But there was little that could be done to help my nightmares go away. Every day in the hospital, I heard the cries of pain of both soldiers and civilians who had been maimed in the war. Worst of all, I saw the ugly stumps of amputees. It was only then that I allowed myself to realize how close I had come to having my leg amputated. What does it mean to have your leg amputated? Cut off, yes. These terrors haunted my nights in the farmhouse. I'm sure there was one reason why we all remained sleeping in the one room. Despite their newfound freedom, the Trobitz refugees continued to suffer serious threats to their lives. Of the 2,500 prisoners who had boarded the death train at Bergen-Belsen, several hundred died of typhus before reaching Trobitz. Some, delirious with fever, unaware of their surroundings, had been carried from the train to the village in handcarts. In the first weeks at Trobitz, new cases began to break out, and the refugees realized that the germ-bearing lice were still with them. Many who had not already shaved their heads did so in order to provide the lice of a place to hide and breed, and Marion at last allowed Mama to shave hers. The dead were now being buried in common graves known as telescope graves on the outskirts of the village. These burial pits were so named because they could be expanded according to need. Each time a body was added, the soil to cover it was dug from the ground directly beside it, creating a new hollow for the next body. On May 7, 1945, the villagers learned from the radio of Germany's surrender. The war in Europe was at an end. Rejoicing was mixed with concern, however, for the Russian occupation forces now informed the refugees that they would have to remain in Trobitz until the typhus epidemic had abated. A quarantine period of roughly 2 months was imposed. During that time, none of the former prisoners would be allowed to leave Germany. "We tried to settle down to some kind of life in that place," Marin said. As the food that had remained in the farmhouses was consumed, people began to go on foot or by bicycle to quite distant farms and villages to beg, borrow, or trade in order to keep their families nourished. My brother Albert was an expert at this. He was always off somewhere scrounging for food and other necessities. In many ways, although only 12 and a half years old, he was becoming the provider of the family. For since a journey on the death train, Papa's health had worsened. Before our life in the camps, Papa was a proud and disciplined man, always very exacting and in control of every situation. During Bergen-Belsen especially, it must have hurt him terribly to watch his family suffer and be unable to help us. Once he had been a heroic defender of his country and a respected businessman, as well as a loving and caring husband and father, but the Nazi system had broken him down and robbed him of his self-esteem. Yet he continued to have hope, always carrying with him the German-English dictionary from which he studied, for he still planned that one day we would all go to America. As spring came to Trobitz countryside, freshly grown vegetables began to be available, and the food supply improved. The month of May also saw a decline in the number of typhus deaths. At last, the disease seemed to have run its course, and the refugees began to look forward to returning to their home countries. For the Blumenthals, repatriation would mean return to Holland. But suddenly, as May warmed into June and the number of typhus cases began to mount again, and this time, Marion said, Papa was one of its victims. Just as the Germans had tried to kill us in their own last moments, so this last gasp of the typhus epidemic would not let Papa go. For days, he lay in the farmhouse bedroom, suffering from the burning fever, the stabbing headaches, and the weird fantasies and semi-consciousness of the disease. And then one morning, Albert went to his bedside and saw that he was dead. I think we all were numb with the shock of Papa's death. We had come so far through flight, imprisonment, evacuation, the Nazis' final attempt to destroy us, liberation at last, and now, freedom and sorrow. Mama, too, had been stricken with typhus and was in the early weak stage of recovery. My leg was still in need of treatment, and I could not walk without difficulty, so the task of burying Papa was left to Albert. By this time, the telescope graves had been replaced by single graves, dug in a row just outside the wall of the Trobitz Village Cemetery. There was no possibility of obtaining a coffin for Papa's body. Albert simply wrapped him in a bedsheet on which he'd lain when he died. This became his shroud. Then, with the help of two former prisoners who had been on the train with us, my brother placed Papa's body onto a wheeled cart with two handles in front and two in back. The men helped him to trundle the cart to the cemetery. There, Albert dug a shallow grave, perhaps 4 or 5 feet deep. He placed Papa's body in the earth, covered it, and laid bricks around it, end to end, to mark the site. The date of Papa's death was June 17, 1945. One day after Walter Blumenthal was buried, Trobitz residents were notified abruptly that their quarantine period had come to an end. They were given 2 hours to gather their belongings and board the column of trucks that awaited them. They were about to begin the first stage of repatriation to their former homelands. Although the Blumenthals were not Dutch citizens, their refugee status would take them back to Holland, the country to which they had fled after leaving Germany. Somehow, Mama and Marion were helped onto the back of one of the open trucks. Albert was to join them, but as usual, he was out somewhere gathering a supply of food for the journey. As the time of departure came closer, Mama wrung her hands in despair. What if something had befallen Albert? Where was he? At the very last moment, he came running with his knapsack full, and he clambered aboard. Hands reached out to steady him, but suddenly the truck lurched forward. The jolt loosened Albert's grip on the heavy knapsack, and it flew off his shoulders and bounced onto the road. There it lay in a receding cloud of dust as the truck picked up speed. So Marion said, Albert lost his treasured knapsack, which he had had with him since Westbrook. But this was nothing compared with what we and so many others were leaving behind. There in the Trobit Cemetery lay well over 100 dead, plus hundreds more in mass graves on the outskirts of the town and beside the railroad embankment. All told, at least 600 people, one quarter of the 2,500 prisoners who had boarded the death train in Bergen-Belsen, had perished from disease and exhaustion.